Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, the grass is greener everywhere you look. So many girls out there.
Yes!
Oh, it is.
It is.
The Alex Dono Show here on WQAM. We go out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. We'll talk with Adam Huntington Beasley of the Miami Herald. He is actually the 790 The Ticket Miami Dolphins insider. I have poached him from our sister station. 7 hours, 8 minutes last night, Bees. I know that all the players were asked how they dealt with that delay. How did you deal with the 4 hours in delays last night?
I consumed roughly 17,000 calories.
Me too, man. That was rough. Like, when I was tweeting about it, people were saying, like, oh, I hope you've got enough food back there. I just had to laugh. Like, you guys have no idea how much food there is in a Miami Dolphins press box. I had to roll out of there by night's end.
I think I went back to the barbecue station maybe seven times. and people completely forgot about the carving station.
Yes.
When we got there at noon, that seemed like 4 days ago by the end of the game, so... and of course, I didn't pass up the personal pan pizza at the very end. So I got on the treadmill this morning at about 8 a.m. and Duarte was there mocking me, and I was like, you know what, mock all you want. I'm staying healthy because I ate a ton last night.
You know, so now for the second straight year, Dolphin season is off to kind of a wacky start. You had last season, you had a game canceled due to a hurricane. You had a linebacker go AWOL right before the first game. At some point, you had an assistant coach snorting the white powder on video. It seems like strange circumstances follow this Miami Dolphins team.
Yeah, man. They're, as I wrote in the Miami Herald, they are true Florida men.
You know, yes,
the Florida man meme. They're Florida men because any story about them that, like, if you would make up a story, I would believe it. Like if you're saying that Lazarus came back from the dead and gave Adam Gase some coaching hints to get ready for the Jets. Oh yeah, that's totally plausible. I get that. I could see how that could happen because there's nothing now that can happen. That can shock me. Look, in the course of the last just 13 months, they've lost their starting quarterback to the season in an untouched injury. They lost their season opener to a hurricane. And on that trip, not only did Lawrence Timmons go AWOL because he missed Pittsburgh, apparently, they planted the seeds to lose their offensive lineman to what's the yayo? Is that what the kids used to call it?
I think, yeah. I thought the kids still call it that, but I'm always like, I'm 10 years behind every trend, man.
Yeah. So that was just the start, and then you had all kinds of crazy stuff that happened throughout the course of the season, and then just this week, Marquise Gray was going to be their starting tight end, a non-contact torn Achilles, and 4 days later, the longest game in NFL history because, there was a little bit of lightning in the area. And, look, I'm not blaming the NFL. The last thing they need is that poor kid that was running around the field during the break in action to get struck by lightning.
Right.
That's that, by the way, that was the most entertaining part
that
of the week, was watching this 6-year-old kid or 8-year-old kid just puts a series of moves on these overweight, slow-footed security guards. He looked good. I would not be surprised if Mark Richt has already reached out to his family about a commitment in 2029 or whatever it would be. Just weird stuff happens to this team that doesn't happen to other teams. You know, you'll have the occasional strange story, but nothing consistently like the Dolphins. Look, the Dolphins, going back to Bullygate, have three or four times a year, every year, just become a national curiosity for no reason on the field at all. I mean, this is a team, you go back over the last decade, they're below 500, and yet people know the Miami Dolphins brand for just crazy stuff happening.
You wrote about Mike Vrabel's response to the Andre Branch hit on Taylor Lewin in that special teams play where he just laid him the you-know-what out, Bees. First of all, your thoughts on that play? I mean, obviously, I know that even in the ever-evolving NFL rule set, that was still a clean hit, certainly in my estimation. And in Vrabel's response, he didn't outright say he thought it was dirty, but do you think he was hinting at that?
I don't think he thinks it was dirty. He probably thinks it was unnecessary, and that's the difference. Because, look, Luan could conceivably have made a play on Rashad Jones on that interception return. He was in position to make a tackle, and you know, Andre Branch's block was a legitimate block because he was blocking a potential tackler out of the play. But the blindside nature of it, inciting a brawl, I mean, this is the second time in as many regular season games now the Dolphins have been part of an ugly on-field brawl. And then what I didn't see at the time, and social media alerted to me later, was Fox cameras caught as Luan was walking off the field into the tunnel with the help of medical personnel. They caught Andre Branch screaming what appeared to be body bag.
I saw that in your story. I did not pick up on that either, but I guess that's what you say in a spot like that, Bees. I mean, what else are you supposed to say there?
Well, CTE, maybe.
Yeah, fair.
I think that probably, the block alone probably didn't anger, although it did cost them their starting left tackle for the rest of the game and perhaps this week as well. But the reaction, the Dolphins taunting, there were two, Bob McCain and Jordan Phillips then get taunting flags, which Gase hated. I mean, it drove Gase nuts, and he said that today on the record. And then the Nashville reporter who asked Vrabel about it today brought up body bag. And so I think the Dolphins' reaction to what was a pretty nasty hit. Look, Vrabel was on the ground, motionless,
you know, just
like a sack of potatoes. And then he amazingly just snapped to and started running around like a crazy person. I mean, clearly he had some cognitive stuff going on right
there.
Yeah,
that's true.
And I don't think that's the time to be celebrating in a guy's face, particularly with what we know about the nature of concussions. So, look, it's part of the game. I don't think unless they go completely two-hand touch, you're ever going to be able to get a completely safe football game. But maybe just tone it down a little bit next time.
We're talking with Adam H. Beasley, covers the Miami Dolphins for the Miami Herald. He's also the 790 The Ticket Dolphins insider, but we borrow him on 560 WQAM whenever we can. Bees, it was nice to see Ryan Tannehill back in a regular season game. There was some good, there was some bad in the interceptions, but overall I thought Tannehill had a nice performance. How did you grade him out yesterday?
Yeah, I'd say a B, a solid B. If he wouldn't have had that throw in the end zone, I would give him an A minus because as Gase said, that other second pick to Jakeem, it may not have been on Ryan. Jakeem may have run the wrong route or the wrong depth. And look, it was third and a mile. They were just throwing it up for grabs anyway. So it was essentially a punt. But that first one was egregious. It took points off the board. And look, Mike Gesicki has, what, 6-8 inches on Malcolm Butler? High point that ball. Don't ever short arm it. I mean, I think it's with a 41-inch vertical leap, it's almost impossible to overthrow Gesicki. So, yeah, I think they said the ball slipped out of Tannehill's hands, so that explains it a little bit. But that play aside, he looked good. And it was crazy because the first quarter was basically a wash for the Dolphins. The Titans had two really, really long drives, and the Dolphins got a first down and then had to punt after the next possession because I think there's a procedure penalty on the Tunsil or Juwan James or one of the tackles. So they really didn't have the ball in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So those stats that you saw, 20 of 28, 230, and two touchdowns, were essentially two quarters worth of work. You got to be happy with that if you're the Miami Dolphins. And if you get that consistently now, you got to cut down the turnovers. But if you get two touchdowns and one pick or two touchdowns and no picks every week with, you know, 70% completion percentage, and I think he averaged – was 28 to 230 is probably 7-8 yards a pass attempt. That's good stuff. I mean, that is efficient, good football. And you combine that with what looks to be a pretty decent running attack, a two-headed monster in Frank Gore and Kenyon Drake.
Yeah.
I said before the season 25 points a game for the offense, and they're at 27 now. I know seven of those came from Jakeem, but still they count. So, yeah, I still think this offense can score 25 a game and be really effective. Oh, my God, by the way. Darnold started for the Jets, right?
Yes.
He threw a pick six on the first play.
Oh, no way. Wow, that reminds me. I got to flip over to the game. I got two TVs in here. Neither of them are on the game. Oh, no, actually, I do have it on the left TV. I got to watch
first
the replay
play of
that.
NFL career, a pick Woo! Six.
So you think the Dolphins are the second best team in the AFC East, Bees?
Well, not even close. I mean, good God, the Bills.
Oh yeah, well, they're obviously maybe the worst team in the league. Period. Probably.
What are they thinking? And I know McDermott's going to be the do the coach speak, but there's no way. Look, if you play Peterman again, and that's his name, right? It's not Peterson. It's Peterman.
It's Peterman. Yeah, like the Jay Peterman catalog.
Right. Exactly. You're going to lose your locker room.
Yep.
Because I know these guys are getting paid, but they still want to be able to believe their coach is putting them in the best position to win. And there's zero chance that locker room believes that quarterback gives them the best chance to win. So, yeah, I do think the Dolphins are the second best team in the AFC East. And you know what? They're in first place, baby. First place Dolphins. You got to love it. We may not be able to say this again the rest of the season. But right now, they're a first-place team.
So we've talked about some of the positives from Miami's performance yesterday in the 7-hour, 8-minute marathon. But what were your biggest negative takeaways? Maybe some things on the defense, Bees, that we saw yesterday.
Well, I'll start with the penalties, the 7 penalties that were accepted. And there are a couple more that offset because of during that fight. Those 2 15-yard penalties for taunting didn't count because – the Titans got flagged for one as well. So they still have not shown a great deal of discipline. They thought that problem had been fixed, and obviously it still needs some work. 2 of 10 on third down, Nano.
Yeah.
That has been their Achilles heel for a long time. Red zone offense, they had, I think, 10 points through their first 4 red zone possessions. That is terrible. I mean, at the very least, you want 12 because you're kicking field goals every time. Fewer than 3 points per red zone possession is, I mean, it'll be the worst in the league. So that needs to improve. On defense tackling, I think that there were a couple of runs, and that Henry run that probably should have counted. I mean, they got a little lucky there with a holding call that I know the Titans were upset about. They're a work in progress, but the good news is this. You got to win out of it, and the Titans are a flawed team. Let's not kid ourselves here. They went 9-7 last year. They barely got in the playoffs, and yeah, they won a playoff game, but there's a reason they fired their coach, that they knew that team needed work, and it still needs work. But you got to beat teams like that. And I asked Gase this today, and he didn't want to get into it because he's one game at a time and all that, and that coach speak is real. That's really how they operate. But they had to have known if they lost that game with Blaine Gabbert, without the 2 starting tackles for the Titans, without their best tight end, with 3 interceptions, if they had somehow managed, and a kickoff return for a touchdown, if they had somehow lost that game, it would have been awful. I mean, absolutely terrible, because they only have 7 home games left. You'd have a loss to start the season, what's supposed to be the soft part of your schedule. I think in their heart of hearts, they would have known, man, we just dug ourselves a huge hole. And that's the thing about the NFL. I know there are some Dolphins fans today that were not exactly, waving the pom-poms after yesterday's performance. They're nuts. I mean, they're absolutely dead wrong, and here's why. I put this out on Twitter. Your job as an NFL franchise is to get to 10 wins, right? Because you get to 10 wins, you're going to the playoffs. And if you go to the playoffs, anything can happen. We have 6 seeds and 5 seeds all the time making a run, getting hot, and getting to the Super Bowl. So, yeah, it'd be nice to go 12-4 and have home field advantage throughout. That's not realistic. If you're not the Patriots, you can't have real expectations of that. Patriots are another level of every team in the NFL, let's be honest. They are the gold standard. But everybody else, they're just trying to get the 10 wins. And you have 16 opportunities to get to those 10 wins, and they're 1-0. And they have set themselves up now to go to New York next week to face a rookie quarterback who we've seen already can throw up some ducks.
Yep.
And then after that, we've got the Raiders, who we haven't seen yet, but they're not exactly stacked on defense anymore. And their offense was kind of shaky to begin with last year, too. So they have a real opportunity now, even if they just play okay, not great, but okay, and start to get their legs under them, to start 2-1 or even 3-0. And then really, Gase's MO has been, I see what I got, and then I improve on it. His team's, by and large, I know last year was kind of was wacky, but even still, their offense got better in the second half of the season. The defense fell apart. But in 2016, 1-4, and then they got red hot because they started figuring some things out. And that's what Gase does. So, you know, if you're a Dolphins fan, should you have expectations of making a deep playoff run? Probably not. They're, like the Titans, a flawed team. But they're certainly in that mix of every team in the NFL that can go between 6-10 and 10-6. And a couple of things go right, and they could be playing meaningful football, not just in December, but also January.
Great perspective. Great stuff here from Adam H. Beasley. Covers the Miami Dolphins for the Miami Herald. Follow him on Twitter at Adam H. Beasley. Bees, I know you didn't expect to have like a 11, 12-hour day, whatever it was for you yesterday, but great work is always coming out of that, my man.
All right, well, let's get some sleep tonight, huh?
Yeah, seriously. Thanks for joining the show. Go to bed.
Bye-bye.
Great stuff there from Adam H. Beasley. Yeah, I thought that he brought some good perspective there, and he is actually one of the few media members who was kind of bullish on this team before the season started. For a lot of other writers, there were gloom and doom predictions left and right. Speaking of predictions, I made my weekend predictions on Friday, and I will give you my prediction percentage when we come back. We'll recap those plus. I'll give you all three of my top weekend observations. A new Dono's top three is coming your way next.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
It's pretty sweet. Later this hour, we'll give away a pair of tickets to the Riptide Music Festival, powered by Ford on Fort Lauderdale Beach, November 30th. Through December 2nd with an amazing lineup. Tickets go on sale Friday at 10 a.m. Details at WQAM.com. But be listening through the rest of this 7 o'clock hour before the hour is over. I can't guarantee you when because I don't even know. But at some point this hour, we will give away a pair of tickets to Riptide Music Festival. A couple of interesting NFL stats, a few interesting NFL facts, a few of these about the Miami Dolphins. This per Omar Kelly. Miami Dolphins now own a 12-2 record under Adam Gase when the team rushes for at least 100 yards. He had 120 rushing yards as a team yesterday, and Frank Gore was damn impressive for a 35-year-old man. I loved watching him run. Per Pro Football Focus, Ryan Tannehill had the second highest passer rating in the NFL against pressure yesterday at 129.2. And here's a tremendous Cleveland Browns stat. I take so much delight in this. I don't know how you find a way to, despite being on the receiving end of six turnovers, you still don't win the game, but they didn't lose. The Browns did not lose. They tied the Steelers yesterday, which included missing a chip shot field goal, but they tied the Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday. By opening their season with a tie, the Cleveland Browns actually got off to their best start since 2004. So that team is 0-0-1, but since they hadn't won a season opener, or tied for that matter, in 14 years, with a tie, the Cleveland Browns are off to their best start since 2004. That's remarkable to me. So that's the best season opener they've had in 14 years. They didn't get to open up the victory fridges yesterday. No Bud Light for anyone. And Hugh Jackson is already off to a better start. He already has a better record, I should say, than he did all of last year. 0-16, so a tie is an improvement. Should parlay that into a new contract. You guys have got to keep me here forever. I've already improved on 16. It only took me one game to improve on 16 games from a season ago. All right, my friends, had a busy weekend. I made three weekend predictions on Friday. I will have the results of those plus a couple of other tidbits. It's time for Dono's top three. Top three weekend observations.
It's time for the three most important things you'll hear today. Alex Dono's top three on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Weekend observation number one. As usual, two out of my three weekend predictions were correct, right? I always get two-thirds of the lottery numbers correct before I play. Like, I am uncanny, Solana. Every Friday, I make three weekend predictions. They're pretty specific most of the time, right? And I always bat 66.66666%. I am always 2 out of 3.
Literally.
Literally, I'm only, right? Literally, I'm always 2 out of 3. I guaranteed you on Friday that the Miami Hurricanes would win by at least 60 points against Savannah State. Now, if anything, I was too conservative on that one, right? I also guaranteed a shutout. That was part of it, right? So that prediction was correct. Actually, I had some people, it's amazing how shook Hurricanes fans were after, admittedly, what was a brutal performance against LSU. Like, you guys were so shook that you didn't think, some of you, because I got a lot of angry texts, you're putting too much pressure on them, guaranteeing a shutout and a 60-plus point win. I got a lot of texts saying I was asking for too much. You know, they're going to take the foot off the gas pedal. If you've ever watched Savannah State play, because they have one or two games like this against a team like Miami every year, they are completely lifeless, right? And they lost to UAB 52-0 the week prior. I had no doubt Miami would win by at least 60. I did have a doubt or two, though, after the first quarter. 7-0 Hurricanes lead. That was a slow start. But the Avalanche came on, especially during the second half. Lorenzo Lingard, exquisite. And we'll get to Nikosi Perry in a second. So, yeah, my first prediction was I guaranteed you a 60-point-plus victory by the Hurricanes. They won 77-0. That tied their highest point total in program history, which was also against Savannah State back in 2013. And it's the greatest margin of victory in Miami Hurricanes history. They beat Savannah State 77-7 5 years ago, this time 77-0. So the two most lopsided wins in program history have been against the same, I was going to call them losers, but that's kind of mean. The same lads from Savannah State have been on the receiving end of that beatdown twice.
They're being outscored 129-0 this season,
dear Lord.
In case anybody was wondering.
Honestly, should the NCAA even allow games like that to be made? Right? For the NFL is putting so much emphasis into player safety. Is it safe to put Savannah State's athletes against Miami's athletes? Like that can't, I mean, it doesn't seem like anyone came out of that game with severe head injuries or anything like that. Miami actually lost a guy potentially for the season, Greg Russo, the defensive end. Very sorry to see him. He underwent ankle surgery today. But, okay, so it doesn't seem like anyone from Savannah State really got, you know, lit up in a dangerous way. But I think any time the NCAA allows a team like that to play a team like that, you're putting health and safety at risk. I don't think they should even allow FCS teams to play Power 5 teams anymore. Like, for player safety, maybe there's not as much of an emphasis on that in college football as the NFL, but there should be. All right, so here was my second weekend prediction. Again, hit the nail on the head. I guaranteed the Dolphins would beat the Tennessee Titans. Got a lot of doubt for that one. My third prediction, this is where I came up short. I guaranteed a Mike Gesicki touchdown. But God bless him, Ryan Tannehill tried, right? Ryan Tannehill heard the show on Friday. Ball slipped out of his hand, according to Adam Gase. Underthrew Gesicki. Malcolm Butler, an interception in the end zone. Tannehill tried to make that prediction a reality. So as usual, I went 2 for 3 on my weekend predictions. But here's my weekend takeaway number 2. Honestly, I can't believe that lengthy lightning delays don't happen more often in NFL games played in South Florida and in Tampa, considering the weather we have in this part of the country. You know, sure, we've had some on and off bad weather throughout the day yesterday, but the storms that we had yesterday didn't seem out of the ordinary for what we get on any Sunday afternoon in South Florida, right? So the fact that we don't get lengthy lightning delays about 3 times per season rather than once every blue moon is kind of astounding to me. Now, I know that, like, in recent years, the technology of lightning detectors has improved, and that's why you got a delay yesterday. You may have had technology that detected that lightning strike a mile away that you didn't have 5-6 years ago, but I think you've had that technology for a few years now. How that's the first time this has happened is a little astounding to me, considering the kooky weather we have down here. I'm really surprised we don't have more lightning delays. And I'm surprised that's not going to be a I would be surprised if that's not a bigger thing in years to come, weeks to come even. I can remember a few years ago, a couple of Hurricanes games were delayed due to bad weather. One of those being played against FAU at FAU. But when was the last time that's happened with the Miami Dolphins? I can't even remember another lightning delay. So again, I know the technology has gotten better in recent years, but I'm still surprised it doesn't happen more often.
I recall it being an issue with the Marlins, where games were just always being delayed or being canceled.
Well, yeah, because you can't play baseball on a wet field. Right. That's not the lightning, that's the rain.
Right, true, true.
So I don't know, just like lightning delaying football games. Like, I'm surprised it doesn't happen all the time. And I mean, Tampa is the lightning capital of the world. And then my third weekend takeaway. I know I'm not the only one who thought Nikosi Perry showed some great potential on Saturday. I mean, that was a lot of fun watching Perry come into that game. A bit nervous, visibly on his first series, but really settled down nicely. Nikosi Perry throws strikes, right? You can see the difference in the quality of the spiral, the velocity, just the overall arm strength between him and Malik Rozier. It is noticeable. So, again, I'm not saying necessarily he would have been the right choice to start against LSU. Hindsight is 20/20, maybe on that one. But I don't know, man. I'm starting to wonder if, before this season is over, Nikosi Perry doesn't end up being the starter. Mark Richt confirmed on this radio station on the Joe Rose Show this morning that Malik Rozier is going to start against Toledo this Saturday. We know that. And that doesn't surprise me. That doesn't anger me. This is not going to be just a switch that Mark Richt flips, right? For those of you out there who thought, well, look how bad Rozier looked against LSU. Should have started him against Savannah State. You should have immediately turned to Perry to be the starter. You got to work this guy in. You are talking about a redshirt freshman who, prior to Saturday, had never taken a collegiate snap before. And you have the luxury of having beatable opponents for the next, probably 3 weeks, but at least the next 2 weeks, right? I don't think North Carolina is very good. But, I mean, Savannah State was a complete cupcake. But Toledo, that's a beatable team. FIU, that's a beatable team. We'll see about North Carolina once we get there. So I'm expecting Nikosi Perry to get time in the next two, if not three games. I am. And so maybe by the time Florida State rolls around, you have a better idea as to whether or not you can turn to him as a starter. I don't really think it's fair to the program or fair even to Malik Rozier just to turn to Nikosi Perry, or even fair to Perry for that matter, just to turn to him on Saturday. But if he continues to get playing time, I think maybe by the Florida State game, if Malik Rozier is still a little bit shoddy as a starter, that you have an option to turn to with Malik Rozier. And listen, it's not to say that Rozier didn't play okay against Savannah State. He did badly miss that pass on 3rd and 5 in the first quarter, though. Finished the game 8 for 12. Did throw Jeff Thomas in stride. Thomas made a tremendous play to take that 67 yards to the house. Again, it goes to show you how much talent you have in that offense. You need to get the football to those playmakers, and Jeff Thomas has been your biggest playmaker so far. But I obviously know I'm not the only one who really thought Nikosi Perry showed a lot of potential on Saturday. I was happy to see that. And Lorenzo Lingard is going to be a monster in the future. He's got that track speed, and he's got those instincts. I do want to see more about how he does when he's going up against contact, right? Because on that 64-yard run that he made, he was touched only once on that run, and it was by some dude's fingertips. So, and that's not to take anything away from him, right? Because he had such vision to reverse field. It was really a testament to Lorenzo Lingard that he didn't get touched on that play. But that's against Savannah State. You try hard running against, you know, an ACC or an SEC caliber defense, I would like to see how he does as a freshman against some actual contact defensively, but I thought that he played nicely. Perry seemed to lack accuracy, a texter writes. You know, it'll be interesting if you could use even Jaren Williams in three more games without burning the red shirt. Jaren Williams is the guy who's regarded for having the best arm out of those four quarterbacks, period. Didn't see a whole lot of him in Saturday night's game. And we do know one thing. You may question how many more times this season Malik Rozier starts in games. We know he's not starting next season because he is out of eligibility. So who do you turn to next year? Will Perry be the guy, or could Jaren Williams sneak up on him? All right, when we come back, talk some NBA. Talk a little football as well. Ira Winterman is the most versatile guest in talk radio. Ira Winterman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel will join us next year on QAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Back here on the Alex Dono Show, we'll be talking with Ira Winterman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel in a moment. Some Kane stats that I found intriguing coming out of Saturday. You know, we've talked about 77-0 being the most lopsided win in program history. And 77 points equaled the highest point total in program history, also against Savannah State. But 77-0, Saturday's win over Savannah State, was Manny Diaz's first shutout in 6 years as a defensive coordinator. Had one in Texas back in 2012. Hadn't pitched a shutout as an assistant coach since then. 6 years. Now, this stat was actually shared to me before the game by Tim Reynolds from the Associated Press, and it held true throughout this game. Malik Rozier undefeated as a starter when he completes at least 50% of his passes. So he doesn't have to be great. He just has to be average, right, to win games with that team. As long as he's at least 50%, the Canes are guaranteed a victory. Went 8-for-12 on Saturday. You know, very limited playing time for Rozier into the second quarter. And this one I really like. I had to do a little more research on this stat just to make sure I had this correct. Prior to Saturday, Miami's biggest shutout win prior to 77-0 was a 62-0 victory back in 1928. So the very early days of the program. A 62-0 shutout victory in 1928. You will literally never guess who that was against. Havana. Yes, Havana, Cuba. Back in those days, 1928, at I don't know if it's Havana University or University of Havana, they had an American football program back in the 1920s. And I think they played Miami at least three times during the 1920s. And in 1928, the Hurricanes laid the smackdown 62-0 on Havana. I think if you could find a way to put them back on the schedule, you would, but I don't think they have an American football program anymore, right? But, I mean, Savannah State will no longer be available. They're moving from FCS to Division II. If you could put Havana University back on that schedule for a cupcake game, I think you would do it. So the second biggest shutout win ever in the history of that program was against Havana University. And the Canes, you probably noticed, moved up actually one spot in the polls. From number 22 to number 21. No, man. I kind of feel like I'm more comfortable being in the 20s than I was at number 8. Like, they were a fraudulent number 8 to start the season. I think we can all safely say that was not the 8th-ranked team in the country. In fact, I've got to throw a little bit of an apology at Kirk Herbstreit, because before the season, he spoke with Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald, and Herbie told Barry, I think Miami should more be the 11th or the 12th ranked team. I think number 8 is a little bit too high for them. So what did we do? We ripped Herbie a little bit. Why is Herbie coming after the Canes? He's usually very kind to the Canes. I think Herbstreit, if anything, he oversold the Canes at being a team that should have been 11 or 12. I think at this point, not to say the team can't get better as the season goes on, but number 21 seems about right for them. And I think I'm okay with that at this point. What really stood out to you from Saturday's Miami Hurricanes performance? I didn't guess that Trajan Bandy would be the first turnover chain holder, right? I gave you my personal odds on that last week, and I thought just the safe pick was Jaquan Johnson to be the first guy to put on the chain. Jaquan Johnson had that great punt block, though. That was nice. Mark Rick said that was his favorite highlight from the game, in fact. I would have told you either Jaquan Johnson or maybe Sheldrick Redwine. I think Redwine was the second guy to put it on, but Trajan Bandy, we should have known. I mean, Bandy had one of the biggest turnovers of last season. That interception late in the second quarter
against Notre Dame was that was the loudest reception from the crowd that any turnover got at Hard Rock Stadium last year. And so Trajan Bandy becomes the first guy to put it on this year. I like the tight ends, man. Brevin Jordan and Will Mallory. I love the fact that the two of those guys really enjoy being here together. They enjoy playing together. They're good friends. It doesn't always work that way in today's college football, right? I mean, you can shout at me till you're blue in the face. Well, Dono, do you remember in the late 90s, early 2000s, when you had in the same backfield, you had Clinton Portis and you had Willis McGahee and Frank Gore and Najee Davenport. They were all on the same team. They didn't mind competing. Yeah, okay. That was damn near 20 years ago. The reality of today's college football is the diva mentality, and I'm not just talking Miami, I'm talking the entire country. The diva mentality is guys would rather just transfer somewhere for playing time rather than compete. It happens a lot. It happens a lot these days. Very hard to land 2 4-star tight ends in the same recruiting class, unless you're Alabama, because they seem to get 5 stars, 3 deep at every position. But it's still very hard to get 2 4-star tight ends in the same class, a 5-star and a 4-star running back in the same class. It's not a guarantee they all stay. I think that's more of an issue at quarterback, though. I'll be honest with you. I like what Nikosi Perry showed me on Saturday. I like it a lot. I like the potential of Jaren Williams. You hear a lot of good things about Jaren. It's hard for me to imagine that 2 years from now they're both still on this team. I hate to say it, but you've got a redshirt freshman and a true freshman. It's hard for me to believe that Nikosi Perry and Jaren Williams will both be on this team 2 years from now. I think whoever wins that competition next year is probably the guy moving forward, and then the other guy finds another place to play. That's just how that works. But as far as Brevin Jordan and Will Mallory go at tight end, you know, they both caught touchdowns. Jordan caught 2. Will Mallory caught that early touchdown, which was great to see him get in the end zone. They're friends. They don't mind competing. Well, you know what? They're not even really competing, because I think one of the selling points to get both of them here was just 2 years ago, you had the illustration of, well, look at how we used David Njoku and Chris Herndon in the same offense. 2 tight ends on the field together, 2 tight ends getting plenty of snaps, both thriving, both making plays. We can have a two-headed monster at tight end in this offense. That's the nickname that UM gave these guys, the two-headed monster for Jordan and Mallory. I think both of them can be elite tight ends in the country, and they don't mind sharing that spotlight a little bit. I love that. Wouldn't surprise me if by the end of the year, not going to say he's going to be the biggest yard getter, the biggest touchdown scorer. I don't think the stats are going to be up there, but I think by the end of the year, we might all be at a consensus that Lorenzo Lingard is already the best running back on that team. I think he's that good. I really do. On the negative side, I got to bring this up because this was something that screamed at me during the first quarter of that game. You know, when Savannah State's defense was still fresh, they got very tired late in that game. But when Savannah State's defense was at 100% fitness early in that game, Miami's offensive line was not bullying those guys nearly enough, right? That's always something that should scream at you when you're watching a game with a ranked Power 5 team against an FCS pushover. If you are not, if your offensive line is not mauling their defensive line and opening gaping holes for your running backs and giving your quarterback 6-7 seconds to throw the football, you've got to worry about that offensive line. I think Miami's offensive line, talking about the Canes, is still a work in progress. Now, by the fourth quarter, when nobody was touching Lorenzo Lingard, yeah, you're opening up gaping holes. Savannah State, I just thought, for a team that was physically overmatched, got very tired late in that game. But the fact that in the fourth quarter, in the first quarter, I should say, you actually had competitive battles in the line of scrimmage, that's not something I was overly proud of as a Canes fan watching that. I thought the offensive line should have been a lot more dominant than they were early in that game before Savannah State's D-line completely ran out of gas. So that was something that jumped out at me as potentially concerning. Let's go to the phones. Let's talk to our pal Cookie Monster. What's up, Cookie?
Cookie!
Dude, all I gotta say is 770.
you showed up.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you better show up against a team like that, but I'm with you.
Because weren't you having a discussion that if Florida won and Miami didn't win as dominant as they did, shouldn't they have dropped?
Yeah, but neither of those things happened, though. I mean, you know, Florida lost to a basketball school, and Miami humiliated the FCS team. So all is right in the universe.
I feel like if we would have played LSU a little bit later in the season, it would have been a better game, in my opinion.
It's hard to believe it wouldn't be. It's no excuse for not being ready for that opening game, but they clearly weren't ready for that opening game.
But we will beat Toledo, and we will beat FIU. That's a fact. But talking about the big boys, what do you think about that win right there? Because Titans.
I think it was an underrated win because a lot of people are tearing it down. Oh, well, look, Delanie Walker got hurt, and Marcus Mariota got hurt, and Taylor Lewan got hurt. No, I thought the Dolphins made plays in yesterday's game, and I thought the Dolphins dealt very well with the delays, right? Anytime you came back from one of those weather delays, the Titans looked worse and the Dolphins looked better. So, and the Titan players were dropping like flies in that game. I could see how a pair of two-hour weather delays would affect a team's physical warmth and fitness, but it didn't affect Miami the way that it did Tennessee. I thought the Dolphins earned that win yesterday, and I'm not going to apologize for a victory. I still don't think the Dolphins are a playoff team. I predicted they would beat the Tennessee Titans, and they came through. I thought Rashad Jones played great. I thought Frank Gore played great. I thought Tannehill played pretty well. I gave him about a B minus or a B for his performance. I thought the 75-yard touchdown to Kenny Stills was exquisite. I saw a lot of things to like in yesterday's game. Too many penalties, not great tackling by the defense, but overall, I'm happy with the Dolphins' performance.
Talking about the penalties, didn't it seem a little bit cleaner compared to how they were playing?
Yeah, I guess it seemed cleaner than how they played at the end of last year, but you still had some dumb penalties. And I know that Gase was not happy about the unsportsmanlike after that little taunting. Yeah, he wasn't happy about the taunting.
But, I mean, those one on Laremy Tunsil that I feel like, you know, I mean, I will take that play because if he would have let that guy go, he would have killed Tannehill.
Yeah, I remember the one you're talking about. But he clearly got beat on that play. So, he corrected it by taking a kind of a smart penalty. Otherwise, you let your quarterback get killed. But you're the guy who got beat in the first place.
That would have been such a clean hit. Oh, my God. But you know what? I felt good seeing Tannehill get hit. I know, like, people are going to be like, what the hell is wrong with you? But it felt good because he got back up.
Yeah.
He kept walking. Even though I saw he limped a little bit on one of those plays, but whatever. But, I mean, it's like you said, I sound like a broken record. I've been saying it all summer, that there's something about this team that reminds me of 2016 and 08, which are the 2 years that went to the playoffs. The solid O-line, which to me I think they have, and an aggressive running game, And an accurate quarterback doesn't throw the ball that doesn't turn the ball over, even though he had two picks, but he normally doesn't turn the ball over. And a defense that, you know, holds its own. And the defense held its own. That was you know, that's considered one of the top O-lines, right?
Yeah, and also to your point, I thought Derrick Henry was gonna have himself a day, but they did a decent job keeping him in check.
I mean, none of the running backs got over 100 yards.
Yeah.
They got over 100 yards together, but none of them got over 100 yards. I think they held
Deion Lewis came on kind of late and made some plays. He ended up with 75 yards, but you know, Derrick Henry was the guy I thought would really kill us, and they held him to 10 carries for 26 yards.
And the how about the tackles? The nose tackles holding their own. I was surprised.
Yeah.
I was surprised. Because, I mean, last year, our big guy, our millionaire that was sitting in right there in the middle, that always got double teamed, that defense looked worse than this one. That line.
We'll see. I mean, it's still early. I think at some points they might miss Ndamukong Suh.
At the worst.
Listen,
they're going to start 3-0.
I'm going to let you know. I'm going to let you go on that note because we're up against it. So he says 9-7 at worst. Woo, cookie string in the Kool-Aid. Texter writes in, but Donna, we've been fooled for so long. How can we just think, oh, yeah, we're good? We're just one game in, and I'm an optimistic Dolphins fan. Again, don't misunderstand me. Solana, how many dozens of times have I had to say this tonight? Just because I'm saying positive things about yesterday's positive performance doesn't mean I'm predicting playoffs, right? I'm not saying the Dolphins are back. I'm saying to me, the Dolphins, I grade them out at about a B for their performance yesterday, and they took care of business. That's all I'm saying.
You've said that about, I'd say, literally 8-9 times.
I just can't believe any time I say something nice about the way they played yesterday, people accuse me of drinking the Kool-Aid. When did I say, oh, 10-11 wins, playoffs? Haven't said that once. Haven't said it once. 8 o'clock hour coming up, which means more of your calls, your texts, your tweets. And later in the 8 o'clock hour, a new edition of Clickbait here on QAM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.